Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for November 12, 2013. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'll be speaking with Steve Rogers and Mark Pfeiffer about their identification of a receptor for a factor that drives gastrulation in fruit flies. Most animal embryos are composed of three basic cell types: endoderm, mesoderm, and ectoderm. Very early embryos are composed of only a single layer of cells. This sheet of cells undergoes complex movements and rearrangements so that the single layer becomes a three-layered structure. This process is called gastrulation, and it establishes the embryonic endoderm, mesoderm, and ectoderm. Ectodermal cells will contribute to the nervous system and skin. The mesoderm makes connective tissue, blood, muscles, and bones, and the endoderm gives rise to the epithelial cells that line the gut and the respiratory tract. Gastrulation is absolutely essential for embryonic development. As Lewis Wolpert put it, it is not birth, marriage, or death, but gastrulation which is truly the most important time in your life. Gastrulation is primarily driven by cell shape changes, which push cells around and cause cell sheets to fold and bend. Fruit fly embryos have been used as a model for studying gastrulation for decades due to their rapid development, the ease of viewing gastrulation in embryos as it happens, and the availability of mutants with defective gastrulation. Using an in vitro assay that recapitulates the cell shape changes that occur during gastrulation, Steve Rogers and Mark Pfeiffer have identified the receptor for a secreted factor that drives gastrulation in the fruit fly. Rogers and Pfeiffer spoke to me from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Mark and Steve, welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Thank you.
Hi, Annalisa. Thanks.
So, Mark, this study focuses on a protein called FOG, which is required for gastrulation in fruit fly embryos. How does FOG contribute to gastrulation, and what happens when embryos don't have functional FOG?
Yeah, so gastrulation, as you brought up in your introduction, is one of the key things that happens during embryonic development. And FOG is a signaling molecule that cells send actually to themselves that allows them to change shape. And that change in shape is critical for rearranging the simple ball of cells that's present at the onset of gastrulation into the more complex body plan that's going to be the whole embryo. In embryos that lack FOG, and the reason it's called FOG or folded gastrulation, is that those cell shape changes don't occur in a coordinated way, and the embryo ends up folding itself up when it's trying to gastrulate.
Steve, how does FOG contribute to gastrulation molecularly?
When Drosophila undergo gastrulation, there's a strip of cells along their ventral surface that are actually induced to invaginate into the interior of the embryo, and those cells go on to give rise to the mesoderm. And the mechanism by which they actually find their way into the interior of the embryo is by folding of the epithelial layer that essentially constitutes the embryo itself. And the strip of cells are designated by a genetic program to become the mesoderm early on, and they begin to produce FOG and actually secrete it from their apical surface, where it's been hypothesized they then bind to a receptor for FOG, and they trigger a process called apical constriction, by which the actin cytoskeleton essentially contracts to cause them to change shape, and the shape change is what pushes them inside the embryo.
So FOG is a secreted factor that's made by these epithelial cells. What's the receptor for FOG?
Well, so the receptor for FOG has sort of eluded identification for many years, but the kind of the punchline of the paper that we're publishing is the identification of the G-protein-coupled receptor that we've renamed MIST, for mesoderm invagination signal transducer.
To look at FOG function in this study, you used an in vitro assay. Can you describe that assay and how it mimics what happens in the embryo?
So the specialty of my lab is the use of cultured Drosophila cells to assay cytoskeletal function. And I found during my postdoc that these cells can be used quite nicely to visualize shape changes that are caused by contraction of the actin cytoskeleton. And so we thought that we would capitalize on this shape change in order to look for novel components of this pathway. One of the reasons why we're using Drosophila cells is that they're extremely sensitive to RNAi. And so one can induce a loss of function in these cells simply by taking double-stranded RNA that corresponds to a gene of interest and adding it to the media. These cells have a high-affinity uptake system. They take double-stranded RNA out of the media and inactivate the target protein. And so that's essentially the utility of these cells, the main reason why we use them. So we decided that if we could reconstitute FOG signaling, then we could utilize RNAi to identify candidate molecules that were in this pathway. So the way we went about this was we took a Drosophila cell line, we introduced an ectopic copy of FOG that was tagged with a epitope tag so we could monitor its gene expression. We made a stable cell line that made FOG and secreted the protein into the tissue culture media, and then basically harvested that protein and used it to screen a variety of cell lines to identify one that gave rise to this actomycin-driven shape change called S2R plus cells. And so that's essentially the assay. We make FOG in one cell line, we add it to a cell line that responds to it, and that was kind of the starting point.
And then you use those cell lines to identify the receptor for FOG or components of FOG signaling by finding cells that couldn't respond when you knock down particular genes by RNAi.
Exactly. We knew from a work from a variety of other labs what some of the other components were in the genetic pathway that were acting downstream of FOG. One of those genes was a G-alpha-12-13 related protein called concertina. So the fact that there was a G protein acting somewhere within the pathway led us to the hypothesis that we were dealing with a G protein-coupled receptor. So that was sort of the starting point. One of the nice things about flies, obviously, is that we have an entire genome that's been sequenced and curated. And so we went through the genome and made a list of all known or predicted G protein-coupled receptors and essentially made a collection, a library, of double-stranded RNAs that corresponded to each one of those genes. And so we set up S2R plus cells in 96 well format, knocked out one receptor per well, and let them grow for a period of time, replated the cells onto glass bottom 96 well plates, and then treated them with FOG, and just asked the question, did any of them prevent the cells from responding to exogenously added FOG? And we found one single gene that had not been studied yet that blocked the response to FOG.
And this GPCR is called MIST?
Yes, it is now. It was called Methuselah-like protein 1, based on its identity with a known GPCR called Methuselah. It falls into the same clade of receptors. But to date, no one had really looked at it.
So you identified MIST as the FOG receptor based on RNAi knockdown. When you knock it down, the cells can't respond to FOG. Did you also look to see whether FOG and MIST interact biochemically?
The actual biochemical interaction, because this family of receptors spans the membrane 7 times, it's actually a pretty tricky thing to do is show that they interact biochemically. And that's just a big challenge, I think, in general for the GPCR field. So the other types of experiments we did were, we were able to take the gene encoding MIST, put it back into cells that did not respond to FOG, and endowed them with the ability to contract when we put FOG on them. The other thing that we did was we were able to show that cells that overexpressed MIST are able to capture soluble FOG on their surface.
So I had the good fortune 20-something years ago to be a postdoc in Eric Kabishos' lab during the time when Derry Sweeten identified the cell shape changes that are occurring during invagination of the mesoderm, when Mike Costa cloned FOG, and when Suki Parks cloned concertina. And so, 20 years ago, we were sitting around the lunch table every day for weeks, right, talking about the fact that we had a G protein and there must be a G protein coupled receptor. And when Mike's data came through and it looked like it was a secreted ligand. And so I was really very excited to be invited by Steve to be part of this collaboration. Because again, it's really the end of more than 25 years search for this molecule, and I think that's really cool. And the idea that he was able to use this novel technological approach where the genetics had failed, essentially, that's a pretty cool thing.
I can't think of a lot of GPCRs that are involved in gastrulation. Are there other GPCRs that are involved in signaling during early embryonic events like gastrulation?
Yeah, in fact, that was one of the things that we were most excited about, because, in fact, when we went to look, there are only a handful of GPCRs involved in any developmental process. They're extremely important. They're the target of a significant fraction of the drugs that you buy at the pharmacy, but most of those are, you know, hormone receptors or neurotransmitter receptors, and really only a very small number of examples are found in the field of development. Probably the closest, but it's not the same as a G-protein coupled receptor that's thought to be involved in germ cell migration. But yeah, in terms of gastrulation, there weren't any known.
How similar are invertebrate and vertebrate gastrulation, Mark? They're clearly very different morphogenetically. I mean, if you look at the embryos, they're very, very different, and the movements are very different. But, you know, a lot of developmental processes rely on the same molecules, even, you know, between very different species. Are homologs of FOG involved in vertebrate gastrulation?
Yeah, this is a fun question for me right now, because actually this week I'm teaching my cell and developmental biology class about gastrulation in different animals, so I've been thinking about this directly. So it depends on where we ask in this pathway. So the actomycin machinery is going to be involved in apical constriction in essentially all cells that apically constrict, and apical constriction is going to be a key part of gastrulation in all animals. The Rho pathway is probably going to be involved in triggering that apical constriction in a variety of different places. It's certainly been demonstrated in vertebrates like the frog. But the upstream molecules, first, you know, up until now, they really weren't known. Now that we know that FOG and MIST are involved, we can ask that question. And the answer is actually not a simple one. FOG and MIST actually are quite rapidly evolving proteins. We've known that about FOG for almost 20 years now. And in fact, even in related Drosophila species, they're present, but they're clearly more different than many other of the proteins in this pathway. So I think it's likely that it's not going to be the case that FOG and MIST homologs are involved in gastrulation in a wide variety of animals. However, that G protein, the particular kind of G protein that's involved, that G alpha 12 13 family, they're involved in regulating the cytoskeleton in all animals. So it may well be that there are other G protein coupled receptors that feed into that pathway and are involved in vertebrate gastrulation. I think that's still an open question that it'll be fun to learn the answer to.
Steve and Mark, thanks for speaking with me.
Thank you. It was fun.
Thanks, Annalisa.
That was Steve Rogers and Mark Pfeiffer, senior authors of a paper published in the November 12th issue of Science Signaling by Manning and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any questions or comments, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.